Državni izpitni center. Splošna matura 2017. Lepo pozdravljeni. Pričenja se reševanje izpitne pole slušnega razumevanja angleščine. Izpitna pola je sestavljena iz dveh delov, dela A in dela B. Vsak del vsebuje govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo in nalogo, ki se nanj nanaša. Najprej boste nalogo prebrali in jo nato med poslušanjem besedila sproti reševali. Vsako besedilo boste poslušali po dvakrat. Začetek in konec besedila bo označeval takle zvočni znak. Rešitve, ki jih pišite z nalivnim peresom ali s kemičnim svinčnikom, vpisujte v izpitno polo v zato predvideni prostor. Pišite čitljivo in skladno s pravopisnimi pravili. Če se zmotite, napisano prečrtajte in rešitev zapišite na novo. Nečitljivi zapisi in nejasni popravki bodo ocenjeni z nič točkami. Zaupajte vase in v svoje zmožnosti. Želimo vam veliko uspeha. Poslušajte pozorno. Odprite izpitno polo.
Section A. You will hear Lisa Jardine, a British historian, talking about her family history. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
Family history is an activity that has always had its passionate advocates and has been stimulated further by the television series Who Do You Think You Are, in which celebrities are helped by trained historians and archivists to trace their roots. In recent years, the National Archives at Kew have been dealing with increasing numbers of ordinary people looking for records relating to their own lives. Many archives now devote special resources to these users. For several years, my sister Judith has been researching the family history of the Flattos, my father's mother's family, inspired by the boxes of faded family photographs discovered among my parents' possessions, dating from the beginning of the 20th century, and inscribed with locations ranging from Łódź in Poland to Kiverdale Road in London. Her attempts to identify and connect the sitters in the photographs has led her deep into genealogy and obliged her to learn about European history in the early decades of the 20th century. She has journeyed intrepidly to Jewish cemeteries at East Ham, Raynham and Bushey at the ends of the district and metropolitan tube lines to read genealogical data off the family gravestones. I confess that as a professional historian, I did not always take her efforts seriously. In genealogy, so much depends on guesswork and surmise, so many of the documents defy interpretation. The outcome, I have tended to feel, is bound to be part romance, part sentimentality, the tale of impecunious wanderers driven from their homes by persecution, then working their way up to respectability in Britain. In one of our family boxes, for example, is a formal wedding photograph of my grandmother, Celie Flatto, barely in her 20s, with her new husband, Abram Bronowski. Taken in 1906, it is stamped with the address of the photographer's studio, 436 Whitechapel Road, London. But her eldest son, my father, was born in Łódź, Poland, in 1908. He didn't arrive in London with his parents and two siblings until 1920. Nothing in the records explains why the couple were in London earlier, nor why they had returned to Poland. Judith had scoured the census data and called up all the relevant documents in the National Archives. although all the other members of the family, her parents and siblings, her husband and children, had been naturalised sometime in the 1920s and 30s, there was no naturalisation document for Grandma Seeley. The marriage certificate Judith unearthed listed Abraham's occupation as professional singer. We knew nothing about any singing. Then, last summer, Judith telephoned me. She had discovered that two nieces of Grandma Seeley were still alive and happy to meet us. So in early October, we went to tea with Ruth and Dorothy, sharp as mustard octogenarian daughters of Seeley's much younger sisters, Ada and Mary. Over biscuits and cups of tea, they studied Judith's cache of photographs, casually identifying people she would never have been able to match to her family tree. "Oh, look, there's me with my mother and Auntie Rose. There are my aunts, all dressed up to go out dancing." I study the period 1500 to 1800. All those who play a part in the stories I endeavour to reconstruct are long dead. What a thrill, then, to encounter the miracle of oral history, of having a person in front of you who was actually there.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Family history is an activity that has always had its passionate advocates and has been stimulated further by the television series Who Do You Think You Are?, in which celebrities are helped by trained historians and archivists to trace their roots. In recent years, the National Archives at Kew have been dealing with increasing numbers of ordinary people looking for records relating to their own lives. Many archives now devote special resources to these users. For several years, my sister Judith has been researching the family history of the Flattos, my father's mother's family, inspired by the boxes of faded family photographs discovered among my parents' possessions, dating from the beginning of the 20th century, and inscribed with locations ranging from Łódź in Poland to Kiverdale Road in London. Her attempts to identify and connect the sitters in the photographs has led her deep into genealogy and obliged her to learn about European history in the early decades of the 20th century. She has journeyed intrepidly to Jewish cemeteries at East Ham, Raynham and Bushey at the ends of the District and Metropolitan Tube Lines to read genealogical data off the family gravestones. I confess that as a professional historian, I did not always take her efforts seriously. In genealogy, so much depends on guesswork and surmise, so many of the documents defy interpretation. The outcome, I have tended to feel, is bound to be part romance, part sentimentality, the tale of impecunious wanderers driven from their homes by persecution, then working their way up to respectability in Britain. In one of our family boxes, for example, is a formal wedding photograph of my grandmother, Seeley Flatto, barely in her 20s, with her new husband, Abraham Bronowski. Taken in 1906, it is stamped with the address of the photographer's studio, 436 Whitechapel Road, London. But her eldest son, my father, was born in Łódź, Poland, in 1908. He didn't arrive in London with his parents and two siblings until 1920. Nothing in the records explains why the couple were in London earlier, nor why they had returned to Poland. Judith had scoured the census data and called up all the relevant documents in the National Archives, although all the other members of the family, her parents and siblings, her husband and children, had been naturalised sometime in the 1920s and 30s, there was no naturalisation document for Grandma Seeley. The marriage certificate Judith unearthed listed Abraham's occupation as professional singer. We knew nothing about any singing. Then, last summer, Judith telephoned me. She had discovered that two nieces of Grandma Seeley were still alive and happy to meet us. So in early October, we went to tea with Ruth and Dorothy, sharp as mustard octogenarian daughters of Seeley's much younger sisters, Ada and Mary. Over biscuits and cups of tea, they studied Judith's cache of photographs, casually identifying people she would never have been able to match to her family tree. Oh, look, there's me with my mother and Auntie Rose. There are my aunts, all dressed up to go out dancing. I study the period 1500 to 1800. All those who play a part in the stories I endeavour to reconstruct are long dead. What a thrill, then, to encounter the miracle of oral history, of having a person in front of you who was actually there.
This is the end of Section A. Section B. You will hear an interview with Abigail Washburn, a singer. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
There's been a lot in the news in recent weeks about the developing special relationship between China and the UK. So what about America and China? Well, Abigail Washburn is an American folk singer and banjo player who's been touring China in an attempt to promote a link between the two countries. She's been singing songs from her own culture and traditional songs in Chinese. And on Saturday, the 14th of November, she and her husband, Bela Fleck, will perform at the Royal Festival Hall in London as part of the London Jazz Festival. Abigail, how did this fascination with China begin?
It started in college. I simply saw a poster on the wall that said, "Study Chinese in China," and I ended up spending a summer there with that program. And at first, it was not love at first sight. The pollution, I felt sick all the time, stuffed nose. It was hard to connect with people because I didn't speak Chinese, so I felt people were either trying to sell me things or study their English on me. And when I came home to the United States, I felt like, good riddance, I don't know that that's the place for me. That was too hard. It was too hard to connect. And I'm the kind of kid that instead of going to the senior prom, the senior dance, I went to the Youth United Nations Conference in Winnipeg, Manitoba. So I have this picture of Gandhi on my wall and the United Nations mural and Martin Luther King Jr. And those were sort of my icons in high school. And after I got back from China that summer, I was looking up at the poster of Gandhi on the wall. And one morning I woke up and I realized I was disenchanted with 1.3 billion people on the face of the planet. And I thought, this isn't okay. And so I went back. And I went back to Sichuan the second time and fell madly in love with the culture through an elder woman named Lao Wang, old lady Wang. And it just went from there. And I thought I was going to be a lawyer in China. That was my plan.
And you ended up as a singer in China and America.
Quite a switch.
But why did you think taking the music there was a way of fostering a link between the US and China?
Well, my original intent, when I realized my own disenchantment with China, I realized that could be quite a common reaction amongst Americans, the ones that went there and the ones that didn't. The only kind of information we were getting was through the media, and that tends to be about trade deficits and the evils of communism. And that sets up a shaky foundation for a strong relationship between the two countries, especially the humans. And I realized I needed to do something about it. You know, you see that space in the world that maybe you can fill. And I saw that when I saw my passion for China and this disenchantment between the peoples of the two countries.
So how easy is it to sing in a Chinese style and in Mandarin?
Well, it takes a while to learn Chinese. I'm still studying. I'm 18 years in. And I would say that the singing style itself is actually a bit easier than the speaking because the tones become less significant as you're singing a melody.
Can you do it just off the top of your head?
Sure. This is a line from a traditional piece from Western Sichuan Province that I learned from Old Lady Wang in 1996. It's called "Tao Chu Lai Xi Yang Yang," and it goes like this.
Now you will hear the recording again.
There's been a lot in the news in recent weeks about the developing special relationship between China and the UK. So what about America and China? Well, Abigail Washburn is an American folk singer and banjo player who's been touring China in an attempt to promote a link between the two countries. She's been singing songs from her own culture and traditional songs in Chinese. And on Saturday, the 14th of November, she and her husband, Bela Fleck, will perform at the Royal Festival Hall in London as part of the London Jazz Festival. Abigail, how did this fascination with China begin?
It started in college. I simply saw a poster on the wall that said, study Chinese in China. And I ended up spending a summer there with that program. And at first, it was not love at first sight. The pollution, I felt sick all the time, stuffed nose. It was hard to connect with people because I didn't speak Chinese, so I felt people were either trying to sell me things or study their English on me. And when I came home to the United States, I felt like, good riddance. I don't know that that's the place for me. That was too hard. It was too hard to connect. And I'm the kind of kid that instead of going to the senior prom, the senior dance, I went to the Youth United Nations Conference in Winnipeg, Manitoba. So I have this picture of Gandhi on my wall and the United Nations mural and Martin Luther King Jr. And those were sort of my icons in high school. And after I got back from China that summer, I was looking up at the poster of Gandhi on the wall. And one morning I woke up and I realized I was disenchanted with 1.3 billion people on the face of the planet. And I thought, this isn't okay. And so I went back. And I went back to Sichuan the second time and fell madly in love with the culture through an elder woman named Lao Wang, old lady Wang. And it just went from there. And I thought I was going to be a lawyer in China. That was my plan.
And you ended up as a singer in China and America.
Quite a switch.
But why did you think taking the music there was a way of fostering a link between the US and China?
Well, my original intent, when I realized my own disenchantment with China, I realized that could be quite a common reaction amongst Americans, the ones that went there and the ones that didn't. The only kind of information we were getting was through the media, and that tends to be about trade deficits and the evils of communism. And that sets up a shaky foundation for a strong relationship between the two countries, especially the humans. And I realized I needed to do something about it. You know, you see that space in the world that maybe you can fill. And I saw that when I saw my passion for China and this disenchantment between the peoples of the two countries.
So how easy is it to sing in a Chinese style and in Mandarin?
Well, it takes a while to learn Chinese. I'm still studying. I'm 18 years in. And I would say that the singing style itself is actually a bit easier than the speaking because the tones become less significant as you're singing a melody.
Can you do it just off the top of your head?
Sure. This is a line from a traditional piece from Western Sichuan Province that I learned from Old Lady Wang in 1996. It's called "Tao Chu Lai Xi Yang Yang," and it goes like this.
This is the end of Section B.
Končuje se slušno preverjanje angleščine. Nehajte pisati Zaprite izpitno polo in jo skupaj z ocenjevalnim obrazcem položite na rob mize. Nasvidenje in srečno!